So get started. Why don't you all, I think we know you, Tony, but why don't we all do a very quick name rank, serial number, what you're responsible for in your organisations, and maybe Liz, you can...
Nice to see you all. Liz Evans, I'm a partner at PwC, and I'm responsible for leading support and advice and guidance to organisations as they go through their GBS journey, and I'm the leader for the US group.
Thank you. Quick reminder, Tony.
Yeah, so those, Tony Filippone, I'm a CPO at Axis Capital. I've actually written and done some research for some of the consulting companies and some of the suppliers in the space on GBS, too.
Great. And I'm Tony Menezes, the other Tony on the panel. We'll figure out how Phil decides who answers what questions here. But I'm with IBM, and I lead our business process operations for IBM globally.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ian Thompson. I head up global business services at S&P Global. That includes order to cash, accounts payable, T&E expense, and procurement operations.
Hello, Jen Wang. I'm with the Johnson & Johnson Consumer Health spinoff, so now known as Kenvue. We IPO'd about 2 weeks old, and I lead the strategy and design for our Enterprise Business Solutions group.
Wonderful. Okay, so to start this off then, you know, we've been talking about global business services, I think for about, I think it's 2012. I think, Tony, you and I wrote a piece on this, didn't
we?
With PwC, actually.
We did with PwC.
Yeah, one of the first pieces, and then all the big four consultants jumped on it. So we've been expanding on the concept for a long time, but, you know, what's worked with it and what hasn't, do you feel? Maybe Liz, you'd like to kick off a bit with your experience?
Yeah, happy to jump in. Yeah. So I think, you know, there's been a long history. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of different perspectives around the table. You know, as I look at it, and I've been involved in this space for far too long, I had to admit it, for like 25 years yesterday on stage with somebody else, which is a long time. As I stand back, there's a couple of things that really stand out to me. Is one is creating a capability, a delivery hub. GBS organizations that are successful and have been sustainable have really mastered the ability to move work. The ability to move work around the world, do it seamlessly, take in more work, transfer work back to business, to third parties. And that ability to move work and control it and maintain efficiency is a really, really important part of the value that GBS organizations deliver. I do think we've been talking about, and to some extent, we've constrained ourselves in transaction rule-based work and trying to break out of that mold and that brand, I think is something that has been extremely challenging. Some organizations have succeeded in that space and have navigated a new brand, and they've moved towards capabilities to offer the organization, like change management, program management, continuous improvement, way above and beyond the transactional services or the processing activity, centers of excellence, et cetera. But I still think there's a long way to go in shifting that mindset of what GBS organizations are capable of.
Okay. And then maybe Tony, you know, you've been in and around GBS for a long time yourself. What do you think's worked versus maybe you're struggling with the concept?
Me?
Yeah, Philippine.
So I think when GBS first came on the scene, it was very much a discussion around the relevance of back office functions to the business. You're talking about a finance organization that really finance operations organization that had no relevance at all to the business. They were trying to answer maybe largely at the beginning just the efficiency question, but they have struggled with the effectiveness question probably of what is important in the eyes of their stakeholders. So you pick your global business process, whether you're talking order to cash or procure to pay or any of your kind of more revenue facing kind of verticals, that's where they really kind of continue to struggle, because that is not an issue of organization, that's an issue of how well you know your stakeholders and how well you are actually engaged in a day-to-day basis with your stakeholders. So it's not a question of where you subcontract it, because like you said, they're very effective at it. There's a number of companies that can do it. It's that it's how you do it. It's how you do the work matters here.
Okay, so it's how we do the work. So, you know, we look at the way things have shifted through the eras, where we looked at, you know, the onset of outsourcing 20 years ago. Digital hit the streets about 2010, where it was about how do you respond to your customers quickly online. And then GBS, I think, as we're saying, has really become that of how do we become more anticipatory about where we're going as a business? How do we start to think ahead rather than react to change all the time? And get to what we call as the Digital One Office. So this takes us to what is the purpose of GBS these days. So maybe Jen at J&J, do you want to think about the purpose? Where do you think it is?
I think one of the, not to tee up your last question, but really, you know, GBS as a transformation engine. So I think when you talk about major business model changes, if you look at the, spin-off, right, divestitures, the ability to, you know, integrate and drive and connect, you know, all the dots to be able to execute quickly. I think certainly, you know, COVID was a great case, you know, for how GBS organizations were really quickly able to set up call centers, you know, central data and repository. And so those are the types of situations that really bring to life, I think, the connected, the capability, the agility to deliver, you know, all the services group here has described.
Sure. So we know what it is, but what should be the purpose? And Ian, what do you think? What should be the purpose of GBS in an ideal world?
Yeah, in an ideal world, I think they're valued partners in all operations that occur within a company. They sit on a lot of data. There's a lot of data to be shared and to be fed back to their stakeholders, whether it's from an accounts payable perspective, order to cash. I could speak for S&P Global. We do partner with our stakeholders. We do, our culture is customer first. Customer first is our stakeholders as well as our external customers. And we keep that mindset going on a regular basis, and it's incorporated in everything that we do. So the purpose of GBS should be to obviously get done the work that needs to get done, that we're whether it's transactional or analytical, but we really need to be transforming, I think, the organization on a whole with services related to even automation, right? So we're things like transformation departments, automation departments, sitting in a global business services center. Then we are teaching and kind of teach a man the fish, if you will, how to use things like Alteryx, Appian, other types of tools, Blue Prism Robotics. That's really what I think the GBS organization should be. No longer just a transactional dumping ground, I think is what somebody said, but more of a value-add partner in everything that happens, because we do have so much data related to the organization.
Okay, so more of a value-add partner, especially when we're in a, we call the digital dichotomy. We have a sort of economic slowdown and a lot of pressures with headwinds, a talent crunch. We're also in a big hurry to innovate, to hit one office, to become more autonomous, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So you're saying, you know, how can we be more of a business partner? But how can we go more from like, as you said, someone who can facilitate things to an entity which is much more of an orchestrator of capabilities? I mean, Ian, maybe talk a bit more about, you know, we talked about, you mentioned automation, mm-hmm. Taking apps, you mentioned Alteryx, Blue Prism, these type of things. But in terms of becoming more of an orchestrator, what do you think needs to shift?
Yeah, excuse me. I think the GBS organization needs to become real partners with their stakeholders. I think what we need to understand is what does an end-to-end process look like? How does that, what's the very beginning? What's the very end? What are all of the things in between that need to occur? And then we pull in the right resources from the organization to make sure that it is working as effectively as possible. Sometimes I look at this as the police or some policing processes throughout, let's say, the revenue cycle or the accounts payable cycle. Creating more visibility and transparency into what those processes are and how they can work more effectively. I think we do have the ability to do that. We should be a little bit more out front and center within the organization, proposing change and having practical solutions, like a lot of the tools that we've heard mentioned during this time here.
I was going to add to a couple of the comments and pick up on this thread here, but as we work with clients from an IBM point of view, and also looking at IBM as an internal organization that has its own GBS organization per se, I think GBS organizations have a chance to actually be an operating leverage for their companies. How can they actually drive cost and efficiency, as we talked about? I think they can also be a platform to provide an enterprise the flexibility to deal with business conditions, mergers and acquisitions or divestitures, as you just talked about, also organic growth. And this is where we're starting to see GBS organizations go from the traditional back office work to also some of the front office work, right? Sales operations is now becoming part of GBS organizations as we go forward. COVID has helped break that hole that every sales organization had on, you know, the support that they had in the source, right? And marketing operations, another one that, you know, one would never think about it. And what's fueling this is also the significant amount of dependencies on data and technology, right, which is part of your circle here. But the important part about being viewed as a back office or a cost center and moving up to being a value provider to your enterprise is actually, I pick on the word change management a little bit differently because change management is important. But I think in the workforce that we're supporting inside of an enterprise or your network, whether it's a supplier or a distribution network or even customers, I think engagement becomes an important phrase here that we need to just think through. Because, you know, no one wants to have anything done to them. And whether it's from the IT side or shared services side, they all want to be part of the process. And I think as we engage with our clients, it's about how do we get folks into a process where they can be part of the input and be part of the change as it evolves. And they all expect, you know, the expectations are then well set. And what we find when we go through that process, IBM's got a term called the garage that brings these three groups together, the user that's being affected by the work, the technology teams, and the process domain experts, so they can all ideate around the best ways of reinventing work. I think that's a big way that the GBS organization can actually step up from the traditional expectations of just the cost center.
Yeah, and I think we talked a bit yesterday about breaking down silos.
Yes.
Between, you know, finance, procurement, customers, the employees. So you think GBS is an ideal place where you can start to do that? You can start to look at operational workflows and say, look, we don't want accountants just behaving like accountants. They need to think a bit more about producing data that is needed by the business. We also need people in customer experience to have, you know, good exposure to workflows for the back office as well. I mean, how does that happen? I mean, how do we break down these barriers? What works and what doesn't work? Jen, you look at...
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a lot about the full-scale solutions and right. Simply, I think, understanding a problem and then knowing and bringing all the resources to bear to solve it. And I think one of the core competencies, I think, of folks in GBS environments is almost, I'll call it relentless dot connecting, right? If you could put that as a competency on LinkedIn, it is just going connecting all the dots and understanding every piece of a process and what that's going to touch in terms of a system, a customer, and making sure everybody involved and impacted, you know, understands that. And I think that's, you know, some of the skill and the recipe of both having the visibility as well as understanding how to engage and how to communicate all the impacts, you know, end to end. And that's, you know, fundamentally how
I'm going to use that instead of police. I say dot connector. I like that. That's very good.
Well, I think Tony said it earlier, though, about, you know, it's not just about efficiency, but it's also effectiveness, right? So it's the insights on the operations that most GBS organizations, they actually know more about the business themselves and sometimes the business stakeholders. And how do you just get beyond just processing work to actually giving your end client, even if it's an internal client, insights about how they could do things better? And there's always this talk, whether it's an internal organization or I'm a service provider to some of my clients, and as to what is done within the shared service center, or the GBS center, offshore or nearshore, versus what's done within the business units. And there's always this reluctance to let go. But unless you're able to drive value and incrementally demonstrate insights, you're never going to break that barrier. And so that's a key hurdle to get over.
Yeah, I mean, Tony Philippine, you've seen this whole shift. But how do you get a view of that whole sort of custom to employee lifecycle in a shared service, in a GBS, where it's like when an order is booked from a client, the order is processed. It's then managed by an account manager. It's then...
It starts with the people that you employ in the GBS team first, right? So let me just kind of, when these teams were all set up, shared service centers trying to become relevant to the business, right? It's all about outsourcing, offshoring, removing, you know, doing a lift and shift, generally speaking, and moving processes elsewhere. Now what you're trying to do is maybe you've Six Sigma yourself to death and you've driven out, you know, cycle times and you hit your SLAs and you've moved everything down. But none of this stuff moves you closer to the intimacy with which you understand the business. In fact, if any of you that are on the buy side have service providers, you're always wondering what's the additional value add you get from your service provider. Well, your stakeholders on the business think the same thing about you, mm-hmm. right? So it's the people that you bring in now, that skill set of offshoring, Six Sigma stuff is not what they're looking for. They're really looking for people who really want to know their businesses, that are like their left arm whenever they're doing things and they're selling business or they're processing stuff, or you've got controllers trying to do reporting. They really want you to be part of those problems. And it's about breaking down that kind of racy model that you've kind of negotiated in order to even get the stuff lifted and moved out. Because now you need to work in a collaborative model. And there's not a lot about racy, which is about collaboration. It's very much about, you know, it was the division of labor. So you need to figure out now how you can work as a team instead of being, you know, individual contributors and bringing things there. So that I think it's a lot about the people you hire.
I'm just going to add to that. I think it's also about how you train and maintain the skills and the curiosity of those people. Because we've traditionally had, as you said, folks focused on efficiency and processing. And now we need them to be curious about digital mm-hmm. and where they can improve, remove work, not just by, you know, continuous improvement, as you say, but by using technology differently, and how can they incorporate their learnings to get closer and demonstrate value to the business. So it's a whole level of curiosity that workforce needs that they hadn't needed previously. They've needed excellence as opposed to curiosity as a driver.
As we've been automating work in our business services, we've been transitioning those more curious employees who pick up those skills into our transition and transformation teams who are using automation, right? And so it's almost like a funnel system between, you know, my operating fingers on keys operators, and as they gain their skill sets, they're so much more marketable in the entire organization. And so we really have a good feeder system to a lot of other groups coming out of GBS. There's a lot of good work, hard work, really good work ethic going on in GBS. And as those skills increase, it just makes the company more and more valuable. So I agree 100%. I think employees are the key, and finding those folks that are really interested in growing their skill sets, whatever that might be.
Interesting. And Tony Menezes, I mean, you lead BPO for IBM. As you're going in and supporting massive clients with their own GBS, for example, you know, your own delivery teams, I mean, you probably have to train them in a similar way. It's like you've got to get these people thinking cross-process, cross-function. How do they partner with the clients? And is there a way that they educate the clients or the clients educate them? How do you feel it's working, particularly when you go into a mature client with mature GBS and they want to add some third-party capability?
Yeah, the kiss of death conversation when I have with my clients is, where's the innovation, right? And and so what we're doing now is to actually have the teams kind of bifurcate in one.
Yeah.
There's a team focus on the operations, make sure we're doing everything we're supposed to do on the operational point of view, drive the continuous improvement, the Six Sigma stuff. But we have now actually inserted into our teams a team that's going to innovate and drive change with the client and with our operations. And look, there's a natural resistance on this team because they are keyed on how many people they have, and that in many ways drives the revenue models. But we've got to realize that if we don't do something, we're going to lose that anyway. So it takes a little bit of faith to kind of say, let's just get on with the client and help them innovate. And that innovation team that's now being put into our client engagements is to actually extract the insights that we have from the operations.
All right.
And go back to the client and help them see how they can reconnect their business. And realistically speaking, you know, it's not about saving 5 or 10 people on this side of the house, but how can we actually make the work a lot better on the end-to-end view of the client?
Really interesting.
And that's where we are going right now. And our clients are challenging us to actually step up on that big way.
It's interesting because we did complete a huge study last year of 1,800 service provider staff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of it was at a time when there was a lot of attrition and the great resignation, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And they all said, yeah, we'll jump for 30% money. We're all bored. We need more. But the one thing that they all said was they can see so much more challenging work within their clients that they'd like to do.
Yes.
It was like the one thing, okay, they might be pissed off with their jobs and want more money, but they actually would be much happier if they were given more challenges to work with their clients, because they can see ways they can help and improve. So how do you make that happen? Maybe, you know, your perspective, and then maybe something from Ian or
right.
Liz
so,
as well. How do you actually get that magic?
From a service provider point of view, one of the things that we did is, you know, we obviously have the full spectrum from the consult and the advisory side to the technology implementations, where if it's in finance and SAP or Oracle or in HR, it would be SuccessFactors, Workday, and the list goes on. And then we have the operate side, and they all actually operated as silos. About a year, 2 years ago now, we actually reoriented the way we're structured, where we're structured around the buyer. So finance supply chain as a buyer, and what that client would buy from consult to implement to operate. And that team now works as one team. So we're bringing folks that have the advisory skills to be able to help transform operations. And we're actually making a career path for some of our operators to step up.
Right.
And that's one way we're actually infusing this value up and down across finance, supply chain, talent, and customer, and of course in the industry verticals as well.
Okay. I mean, Ian, do you work with one or two major third-party partners?
We used to. We were working with a service provider for about 10 years. I think, you know, one of the things that we were able to do over those 10 years was several acquisitions of companies that had multiple locations around the globe, and we wound up leaving that third-party provider. But I think it's one of the things that, you know, when you talk about GBS with a third party, is kind of creating that similar culture of work ethic and other things inside of that third party, wherever they may be. And I think we did do a good job of, you know, it started out with Six Sigma, mm-hmm. It was robotics. It was, you know, Automation Anywhere being brought into our AP process. It was, so over the years, there was a lot of change that we brought to our organization. You heard rumblings about, they weren't as service oriented as our internal employees.
Right, right.
But I'm going to tell you, we quickly, I believe that they were, and our metrics got very good over the years. So it was a good engagement. And we just, at a point a little bit later down the road, decided that we would bring those resources back in. And we wound up bringing over several folks from that third-party provider. But there's a lot of opportunity there, I think.
Yeah, and I think I can, add certainly from setting up a spin-off and having very lean resources, just recognizing that it is not just about kind of outsourcing work, but really about building those, strategic partners where you have mm-hmm. firms and a network and an ecosystem that can really help you accelerate, a capability build when your, internal teams are fairly lean and kind of being able to have that one-stop shop and, not necessarily a kind of fixed fee service model.
Yeah. What's it like having the ability to use a third party versus having people under you to get stuff done? This just, when you look over the last few years of your career, is it sometimes, do you feel less in control or more in control using a partnership or?
It was funny. I think throughout that time frame, we needed obviously different people working at S&P Global to manage different situations. So you saw the type of employee change over the years. I think when we wound up bringing that work back in, there was an opportunity to really solidify the S&P Global culture within our teams. Not that we didn't have great relationships and really good work output from our third party provider, but it is a different level of engagement and just culture, right? And collaboration within the company. It's better for S&P Global at this point, but our third party provider provided a very valuable service for us when we first engaged them throughout their tenure. But from a culture perspective, I like this much better.
Okay. So we did some studies with these are 28 GBS leaders we did just recently on where they felt their challenges were to meet strategic objectives, lack of centralized data that comes across consistently everywhere, whether it's GBS or not, to be honest. But hiring quality staff, retaining staff, and getting out of silos seem to be the big challenges still. I mean, maybe Liz, you talk to You've been talking to a lot of clients for many years about this, but do you feel these are still the biggest challenges, and are they getting any better?
Yeah, the one thing that really, I suppose, surprises me, excites me, and disappoints me at the same time is the silos and the, you know, you've got GBS employee experience there. I think we've long held the belief that employee experience falls within the parameters of hire to retire in the HR world. Right. And we've all kind of neatly in the industry put it in that bucket, but that only really guides the experience of the employee with you as an employer. It's not the productivity of the employee and how they get the work done and how they're excited about work or curious about work or learn in their environment. So I think we need to stretch the definition that we've all used to really ignite and solve some of these problems about attracting the right talent and retaining the right talent. Because I agree with Tony, like the organization, the talent that we all have in our organizations is key to our ability to deliver. And that also identifies and kind of hones in on one of the opportunities to break down the silos. If you have talent that's curious and willing to learn and available to flex, now not everybody is, and that's okay, but being able to identify that talent and flex and cross-train, you're able to break down some of those silos from the bottoms up and demonstrate to the organization that you can deliver more. I think is a really important part of where the organizations go, but we still haven't, we've been talking about experience for a really long time now, and there's very few organizations that have been wildly successful in moving that needle.
Yeah, when you look at the business cases that get developed for this, which is usually the, I can do this for a lot less, how many times have you seen the business case include a big fat training budget for, you know, leadership development or anything that isn't directly connected with that cost takeout, right?
Absolutely.
You never see that part of it, right? No one ever thinks about the real cost of, I'll call it HR, but you know, like what does it really cost to attract and retain resources when these shared services or GBS centers get set up? They don't include any of that. They just figure, oh, I can just, instead of having vendor X do this for me, I can move it into an internal shared service center, or I can take it from our New York office and move it to Bangalore for a lot less. They never think about the real cost of what it takes to build a quality employee experience.
Absolutely.
And not only that, this is the line level staff, right, as you were saying, Tony, but it's also the management staff that gets left with this all. And this is already the place where business processes go to die anyways, and people like, where do you really develop your career for in these areas? Because it's not been built, and then you don't fund it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's the biggest opportunity, but the biggest disappointment at the same time, having been in this space for a while.
It doesn't take a lot. It's a little bit of funding to do, but
I think we should go take that on the road.
But then you see it. How hard is it to get funding, right?
Yeah. You know, it's funny, I look at what we're doing at my company, and I see there is some maturity there in kind of funding our employees and their development from a leadership perspective. Over the years, we have been able to create leadership positions in our, I'll call them low-cost locations, but that's not really what they even are anymore for us. They are our operating centers. I was just in the Philippines and I was in Malaysia, and Malaysia is a recent location for us through an acquisition. And so we went there, and we've had executives going there to try to instill kind of this culture. And we have been investing in leadership training, team building, those types of activities. So it's not, but which they're not very used to, right? They're used to kind of the dumping of work a little bit. And it is, it's been very, I think, beneficial so far. I think people have really seen, you know, feeling the love, if you will, of the visits and the training and the investment that we've made. So I think it really depends on your culture and what your view is of your GBS organization and how they're embedded into the larger enterprise. Again, I feel like as a company, we're a little bit more mature down the road. Our employees they touch all aspects of the enterprise. They have a lot of knowledge, but I think one of the issues is that we still hire at fairly low levels within the company, right? They're not accountants necessarily, a lot of them don't have CPAs. Some of them do actually come into the company in some of these other these other countries. And they make themselves very marketable to other departments, other organizations, functions within our company. And so I do see a fair amount of turnover, right? Despite trying to lock it down, I'm going to get turnover based on kind of where we're hiring and the levels we're hiring at. So,
yeah, I mean, it's almost like, what level do you hire at, and what do you hire them as? I mean, one of the things we spoke a bit about yesterday was, you know, looking at, you know, OpenAI research into what ChatGPT is going to do to, it's making, you know, a lot of university degrees useless. But it's like, you want to bring someone into S&P or a big life sciences company or whatever, right? It's like, you want them in a broad role where they can touch upon many things. They're excited about the business. They have basic operational skill sets. They have curiosity. It's almost like there needs to be a career track, because people have joked many times, GBS or shared services is not a career. It's something you sort of end up in.
Versus... That's for me.
But Phil, I think how organizations value GBS is also about how GBS positions itself, and it takes both sides to make this thing work. Mm. I think some of the leading companies that are now looking at GBS and back to not just getting operating leverage, but also make them flexible to support the service. So I'll give you some examples. A finance director who's moving through the organization is now leading the GFS organization for that entity.
Yeah.
He's going to do 2 or 3 years in that, and he's going to then spin out to something else. When a business leader is leading the GBS organization, it just sends a different signal to his colleagues, because he's one of them, well, that's just come through, and then he or she can then actually really bring a lot more value. And what we see when we see those types of individuals lead it, it just raises the bar of what GBS is expected. Mm. The second thing that I think is going to be a provocative thing for GBS organizations, I'm going to challenge my peers here on the stage, is I think that it is time for GBS to step up and say, the IT execs support us. Mm. Many times they are sitting as peers, where IT's got their own agenda, and the GBS is here waiting and hoping for something to come down the line. Inside of IBM, inside of our GBS organization, we actually call it transform and operate. So Joanne Wright, who's the senior VP for this, actually has both the CIO reporting to her, and separately a chief data officer, and separately a chief analytics officer before you get to all of the functional roles. Mm. And those three execs all support the business functions.
Interesting.
And I think that's how when we start to see some of the newer organizations forming, at that point, the GBS leader then is, you know, and then you can look at it when we look at an organization, where do they rank into the organization? They're either reporting to the COO, the CFO, and sometimes to the CEO.
Yep.
And when an organization makes that level of a commitment, they have actually realized what they want to do with a GBS organization.
That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Talking about the role of tech, I know I'm not going to snitch on you here, Tony Philippine, but I think you once told me that IT was your biggest roadblock.
There's no doubt about it. So I can't, you know, why did we ever need a CIO to begin with, right? It's because we were all spending hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars in our companies in an IT organization, with the costs were out of control, the development life cycles out of control, the ups and downs. I think you needed one throat to choke for all that type of stuff. And then in the result, you ended up distancing your IT from your business because you pulled it out of all of your business and now it sits in an IT organization. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing you do with GBS from an operations perspective. You end up yanking all the intimacy out of it and you stick it in some, you know, less expensive place to do work, right? So I think it's one of those challenges you have. Should your IT organization report to your operations? I don't think there's a perfect solution about organizational charts out there, because as soon as you put your IT CIO underneath your COO, then suddenly, you know, there's still some level of operations that's going on that is not within your GBS organization, your OO. So there's still controllers out there still doing financial stuff. There's still lawyers doing contract negotiations. There's still salespeople doing sales. You didn't move it all into one team. Mm-hmm. So you pick your poison where you want to go. There's no perfect org chart. Should the CIO be responsible to the operational outcomes and be have the same level of intimacy that you want to create as a GBS organization with your customers? With you, yes, you should be. And in fact, you are one of the key customers.
Interesting. And then, so new research we've done has shown that only a third of IT spend, tech spend, is now under the CIO.
It is so interesting. The shadow spend is incredible now. Mm-hmm. Not only that, because, you know, us, you know, business folks can swipe a credit card and suddenly like buy Monday.com or Asana or any of that stuff and suddenly have a workflow tool and I didn't have to hire anyone. You know, it's a little bit of what's going on out there. You know, it's not like the IT organization doesn't have their own business functions in there. You look at what they're running, the project servers and doing all their, you know, allocation of time, and they have their own IT finance teams and IT procurement teams that are stuck in their organizations. It's not a lot different, you know. Where do you want your economies to scale? Where do you want your career development to be for those people? And those are some of the big questions to ask.
I've seen CTOs sitting in finance now in other departments outside of IT. It's incredible how it's all shifting.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of organizations that'll have like a, like you'll have a head of finance technology reporting to a CFO. You'll have the, you know, head of sales technology, head of HR IT is a big one that's out there because the payroll is so complicated. You know, how far you move your operation and IT from your business is a question of the level of intimacy.
Right.
The more org charts you, more tree branches you are away, the further away from you are from understanding your business.
Okay, so Liz, you know, in your experience, are GBS organizations getting bigger and more empowered across most clients you deal with? Are they getting smaller? Are they being outsourced more? What are you seeing from your perspective?
That's a great question. It's all over the board. I'm still helping organizations go to their first generation of GBS, which honestly I'm surprised but excited about, that organizations are still seeing it as a viable way to have services delivered. I do think that what has changed is there isn't one end goal. So the principles of intimacy to the business, staying close to business, staying relevant, delivering value, using data are all pertinent regardless of the organizational construct, whether it's outsourced, whether it's insourced, whether it's in low-cost locations or not. But I think we need to, as an industry, stop saying there's a level five, there's a panacea of what you should look like and how you should be organized, and make sure that the organization, large, small, being put together, being broken apart, aligns with the business objectives, and you can demonstrate that you're driving value. So as an example, I've got a number of organizations that are a true hybrid of landlord-tenant model, where the function has responsibility for the work that's been done and guides it, sitting alongside a traditional integrated solution where there is fungibility of resources that are being cross-trained on different types of activities. And those coexisting, that's nothing that we ever talked about out loud like 5-10 years ago, but it's a reality. So rather than saying we should all move to one specific direction, organizational chart, and have X amount of percent of scope outsourced, we should look at what's the right construct to demonstrate and stay close to the business and deliver value.
Great. I can't believe we're nearly at time. So we're like, still got 20 minutes to go. We're like doing this conversation. So I think this is one of the core pieces. I think we've touched upon most of the stuff, right? This is one of the most interesting parts. I do want everyone to have a quick voice on before we end this session, which is, you know, with the big shift towards, sorry, not this one, it was about remote working. So let me just flip this forward a little bit. You've all seen the S-curve, right? Here we go. So the shift towards remote working has obviously been a big change, and it's really impacted GBS, right? And does this mean that GBS should really start to become the owner of the employee experience? Because it's such an important part of the business. It's, you know, where many of the areas sit. I mean, what needs to change here? So Ian, maybe you could talk a little bit about how remote working has impacted your firm and how you're dealing with that.
Sure. So obviously during COVID, we were actually in the middle of insourcing all of our work from our third party. That's when it happened. We managed to get everybody hired. I told my managers at the time, I said, please don't hire anybody too far away from the office, right? Because they're gonna have to come back at some point. And I had a couple managers who didn't listen to me, but everyone did a great job. We were very, very productive. We did a lot of work, but there was no team, there was no actions within team members. Everybody did a lot of good work, but not everybody was really very connected. So where we're at now, we're in an anchor flex model. We have anchor days, Tuesdays, Thursdays, whatever it might be, and we're flexible the rest. I don't hold people to specific days. I want you to talk to, if you're in an order management team, is the sales team in that day? I want you to be very flexible in how you're managing that work and purposeful. It needs to have purpose when you're coming into the office. Specifically for GBS, I want my GBS teams in the office on days when their stakeholders are in the office. And that's the direction that I've been giving my teams, no matter where they're at. And I think so far it's been working out pretty well. Although I was in Islamabad several months ago, and the team came in, and they're starting to introduce themselves to each other. And I'm like, okay, so you guys have never been in the office. Okay, good to know. But we're reintroducing that culture and the S&P way of doing things to everybody throughout the globe. So it's been working out really well.
There we go. Jen, and you're obviously for a huge organization with many different subsidiaries. Is there like a genuine policy across J&J, or do you all work to your own?
The J&J policy is, is set by country, and so it is, kind of certain days per week. There is, flexibility around the days and a certain, remote day. But I'd say certainly, I think we've become more effective and more deliberate about, peak transactional work. You may be better off at home, more deliberate about the culture and really thinking through and embracing, and probably become even better at, I'd say, building culture and engagement, mm-hmm. because we really have to think about it versus just, kind of everyone, showing up. And I think that drives a lot too. Think about site engagement, cross-functional location, whether it's customer, people experience. I do feel GBS is, the right group with the right kind of lens and skill set across change to really lead, a lot of the kind of experience-related thinking, at organizations.
Wow. And Tony Menezes, what's it like managing one of the largest global BPO operations in the world, dealing with your own hybrid strategy, and then your client's hybrid strategies? Is it getting harder, more complex, or is it surprisingly?
It's given us a level of flexibility, to be very candid. There are some clients that want all their staff back in the office, especially the financial institutions, and so we've obviously obliged them. But for those that have not set a policy, we are giving our employees a level of flexibility here. We are insisting on the teams come together on the same day, because that does drive collaboration, teamworks, and actually creativity that, we want to get out of it. We still run Agile at home. Don't ask me how exactly all the mood models work when people are working from home, but we do actually still do that, all through COVID and all. But I think this is something that we have come to accept, that this is just going to be part of the dynamics of this workforce. We're going to have to be very upfront with the folks that we're hiring, that career-wise, you're going to be spending more time in the office than working from home, just in the way you're going to be interacting with clients. And then especially if you're leading teams, you have to demonstrate that. But for the folks doing the transactional work, we're going to let that have some flexibility based on the type of work and the type of sensitivity that clients have. But we actually have a very open mind on how this will evolve over time here.
Interesting. And I think Liz, final word on this. How do you advise your clients based on everything you're seeing in terms of remote, hybrid, back in office? What do you think is working more than not?
What I've seen working, and it's what we've adopted as well. So within PwC, we've been asked to 50% of your time over a year to be in the office. But I'm a consultant, so last week I was on the road in three different cities, and that's just the way you roll. And I'm obviously here today. And generally speaking, that for our back office as well, our own GBS function, it's the same guidance. Like we've asked for flexibility, totally concur with the advice that's been given. I have very, very few organizations that have said, yes, come in whenever you want to. There's for the vast majority, there's been some guidelines put in place, either X percentage of time measured over whatever. I've got some organizations that I work with that have declared, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, everybody's in the office, and we're going to have specific collaboration sessions to achieve ABC goals or projects, etc. And we're going to focus it on those days so that there can be intent and meaningful interaction in the office. What I have seen folks peel back from as well is, encouraging folks when they are in the office not to spend the entire time on conference calls, because it kind of defeats the object of being there face to face. So folks are, I think, still trying to find the way, but I don't have any clients in my portfolio that I support that have said, you will be back in the office 5 days a week. Yeah. I think the flexibility is there, and we're still kind of figuring it out. I guess we'll settle on it sometime in the next 9 to 12 months when we've been through a number of, you know, business cycle of what makes sense for the organization.
I know.
And Liz, to your point, though, when we also we reconfigure the offices to be more team collaboration versus just go sit at your desk again, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a key part of actually encouraging people to kind of come in.
Yeah, I mean, we used to go to the office, it was your social life.
Yeah.
You met your other half, your partners, you go out. I mean, I used to go out, like, drinking with the IT guys and the payroll. It was like, you went to work. It was a, that's what I think is missing, is the actual work culture.
Right.
You know, we're trying to keep the task culture going a bit more than the actual work culture of work was something different. Now, all these 20-year-olds are out on dating apps and things because that's the only way, you know, meeting people. So, anyway, on that note.
Before we go off a deep end.
We go off. Really great conversation. It went in a very different direction than I thought it would, but I enjoyed it very much. So, Liz Evans, Tony Filippone, Tony Menezes, Ian Thompson, and Jen Wang. Brilliant. Really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you.